On this episode of Newt's World.
Every single solitary, serious investigator have said there's absolutely zero basis to the accusation that I acted any way inappropriately or that my son did.
Every major national, international, and local news operations looked into it has said it's a lie.
So there's not been a scintilla of evidence pointing out anything is wrong. It's not a conflict of interest. There's been no indication of any conflict of interest from Ukraine or anywhere else. Period. I'm not gonna respond to that.
I mean, come on. You know there's not one single bit of evidence. Not one little tiny bit. Is there anything done was wrong? You know that.
Come on, man.
Hi, this is Newt. Due to the virus, I'm recording from home. So you may notice a difference in audio quality. One of the great investigative reporters of our time is John Solomon, who has a series of groundbreaking exposés going back, I think, for a decade or more. And this year, he has really been in the hunt and has unearthed story after story, leading the pack, and in some cases, being out there as an individual pioneer on his own, because as you know, large part of the pack is so anti-Trump, they don't want to be led to stories that don't fit their thing. John, let me just first of all congratulate you on what you've done in creating a brand new news service and the kind of things that day after day you're breaking ground that nobody else is doing.
Oh, thank you, dude. That means a lot. I wish there was a pack. There's very few people that have the curiosity to look at the Biden family corruption and the Biden family cashing in on his public service. There's a few of us out there, Peter Schweitzer, Seamus Bruner, myself. There's much more work to be done between now and Election Day.
Well, can you share with us, just as a general overview, before we get to the most recent things you've discovered, your sense of the system that they had built and the degree to which it genuinely enriched the Biden family?
It's a pretty simple system. It's as old-fashioned as corruption in Chicago or in any other city where there's machine politics. Everywhere Joe Biden had a foreign policy responsibility, China, Russia, Ukraine, you see his son, sometimes his brother, and other family members following behind in the vapor trail of his jet, collecting money. And the Burisma one in Ukraine, Burisma Holdings, is just a really great example. When you get to the granular details of what went on there, you realize how audacious the shakedown was, because Joe Biden comes in on April of 2014 to Ukraine on one of his first visits after President Obama says, you're in charge of Ukraine policy. This is after the Maidan Revolution, when the Russian-leaning leader of Ukraine was ousted. And the first speech that Joe Biden gives in April, when he's on the ground, he says alongside the prime minister, he says, you know what Ukraine needs to do? They need to create a new natural gas system that will make them self-dependent on natural gas and not have to take Russian gas anymore. Now, on the premise of it, it's not a bad foreign policy. Energy independence is a great way to free Eastern Europe from Moscow's influence. Within a few days, what happens from that speech? Hunter Biden's business partner, Devin Archer, and Hunter Biden get added to the board of the largest natural gas company in the country. They don't have any natural gas experience. And that natural gas company is undergoing, at that very moment, two criminal investigations. You can't be more overt in calling for something to happen and then have your family come in and cash in on it. And that happens time and time again. The vice president goes to China. There's Hunter on the jet introducing his father to one of the business partners. And then they start a ambitious plan for $1.5 billion hedge fund. Everywhere the vice president had a foreign responsibility was going, Hunter Biden and the other family members had a bag out there to cash in on their own businesses.
In the case of Burisma and Ukraine, there's this famous video of Biden talking to a New York foreign policy group and saying, you know, I told them they didn't fire this guy. I had $1 billion in foreign aid in my pocket, and it was going to stay in my pocket unless they fired him.
So they said they were walking out to press conference. Said, "No, we're not going to give you $1 billion." They said, "You have no authority. You're not the president." The president said, "I said, call him." I said, "I'm telling you, you're not getting $1 billion." I said, "You're not getting $1 billion. I'm going to be leaving here." And I think it was 6 hours. I said, "I'm leaving in 6 hours. If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money." Oh, son of a bitch. Got fired. And they put in place someone who was solid.
This was during the period when everybody was upset about Donald Trump taking a phone call from Ukraine. And I thought, Here you got Biden on video proudly boasting that he'd gotten the leading prosecutor in Ukraine fired. And they seem impervious to confusion or shame. They have a party line they're going to follow, and they just stick to it, hoping that they'll wear you out. But wasn't it pretty clear that that was enormously to Hunter's advantage?
Absolutely. So when you look at the time frame, after Joe gives that speech in Ukraine, his son lands on the board, they start building up this company, Burisma, even though it's corrupt. What's going on behind the scenes is the Obama-Biden State Department thinks, oh my God, this is terrible. Joe Biden is preaching anti-corruption. His son is collecting millions of dollars from a corrupt company. They're undercutting our foreign policy in Ukraine. Those are not my words. Those are the sworn testimony of people like George Kent and Marie Yovanovitch and other State Department officials that worked for Obama and Biden. By the time 2016 rolls around and the election is there, one of the investigations in Ukraine had been shut down in 2015 after a $7 million bribe was paid. That's not my allegation. That's in the State Department document. So there were two simultaneous investigations going on. One gets closed down after Burisma pays a $7 million bribe. Hunter Biden's on the board the moment that bribe occurs. But there's a second persistent investigation that won't go away. It's the Ukrainian government's own investigation by what's known as the Prosecutor General's Office. And as the 2016 election is approaching, that investigation is escalating. They turn evidence over to the FBI of Ukraine, ask them to get going. They do an asset forfeiture seizure of Hunter Biden's boss, Mykola Zolchevsky, the oligarch that owns Burisma. And the case is escalating. And at that very point, you can see Burisma's panicked. How do we know that? They went to the State Department saying, you got to stop this. Hunter Biden's on the board. You have to stop this investigation. Well, that didn't happen. And so Joe Biden steps into the void in March of 2016. As that investigation is escalating, Joe Biden just happens to fire the prosecutor, Viktor Shokin, who was overseeing that case. He does it by telling the president, if you don't fire that guy, we're going to withhold $1 billion. It would have bankrupted Ukraine. $1 billion is a lifeline to Ukraine at this point. Now, Joe Biden will say, I fired that guy for reasons other than my son. Well, whether it was for any reason, it helped your son's company. It's exactly what they wanted to have happen at that very moment. And it's the creation of a conflict of interest. We're supposed to be, when you're in government, free of conflicts of interest. Joe Biden couldn't be more conflicted in Ukraine. And that isn't my words. Those are the words of the impeachment witnesses like George Kent and Marie Yovanovitch, who said there was definitely a conflict of interest. Joe Biden was undercutting our efforts to bring anti-corruption policy to Ukraine.
So, before we jump to China, which is the really big story, what do you make of this $3.5 million check from the richest woman in Russia? That one just popped up on my screen. And I was kind of like, what? Where did that come from?
Yeah, this is a story we broke about 3 weeks ago. We got this information because the Senate committees run by Charles Grassley and Ron Johnson got what are known as suspicious activity reports. This is when a financial institution says some money just moved through our accounts and we think that there's something wrong about it. And we now know from the good work that Senators Johnson and Grassley did that there was millions of dollars flowing into Hunter Biden's accounts that got flagged by the Obama Treasury Department as suspicious. They file these reports. Well, one of them is a $3.5 million check that comes into one of Hunter Biden's companies in February of 2014. It comes from Yelena Batarina. She was the wife of the Moscow mayor. She became Russia's first female billionaire, an oligarch. And under a law that was passed in Congress, she was identified as one of the people in Russia who allegedly got her wealth through corruption and corrupt means. And so she's been flagged in the United States for a long time. Hunter Biden gets this $3.5 million coming into his company's account. It's flagged for two reasons. One, the source. Everybody knows Yelena Batarina has some questions around her business and her ethics. The second part is it comes 2 weeks before Vladimir Putin sends troops into Ukraine and invades the Crimean region of Ukraine. And the appearance issue, the security concerns that somehow Russia was trying to compromise Joe Biden's son just before Russia was going to take this audacious action and move into Crimea, really set off alarm bells in the national security apparatus, the Treasury Department. And the $3.5 million is only a portion of the money we now know that Yelena Batarina gave to Hunter Biden and his business partner, Devin Archer. There's a document that the FBI seized from Devin Archer, who, by the way, the business partner of Hunter Biden, has been convicted as a felon of fraud and is awaiting sentencing to go to prison. So Joe Biden's son was in business with a felon. But in those documents that the FBI seized from Hunter Biden's company, there's a set of board minutes in which Devin Archer reveals one of their companies had gotten $200 million from Yelena Batorina, not $3.5 million, which is one of the transactions that are flagged. The total size of the relationship, according to Hunter Biden's own business partner in these minutes, was about $200 million in loans and gifts and transactions. He's in business with a corrupt oligarch in Ukraine. He's in business with a questionable oligarch in Russia at a very sensitive time in U.S.-Russia relations. And he's really in business with the Chinese Communist Party.
Yeah, and apparently a whole new set of information came out involving even more activity with the Chinese in the last day or so. It's almost like you can't keep up with it.
It's a multifaceted relationship. It really was. And again, the appearance issue. What bigger conflict can you have but to put Hunter Biden on the Air Force to fly over on an official trip of the vice president and shake them down for a business relationship that, at least in discussion, was $1.5 billion in size? The audacity of this, it sort of rivals what the Clintons did with the Clinton Foundation. The difference there is the Clinton Foundation was allegedly a charity, and so most of the money went to charitable causes, at least by design. Here, it's going into the back pocket of Hunter Biden and the family members, and it wasn't a secret. I've interviewed a lot of officials in these countries, Ukraine, Russia, China, over the last 6 months, and what they've told me, we thought the Bidens were just pretty clear. It was a pay-to-play relationship. If you wanted Joe to be friendly, you greased the palm of Hunter Biden. And that's the impression we left in these countries. Imagine what we should be thinking about in the greatest country of all America, that that's what our elected leaders were doing during that time frame.
How can Joe Biden, as recently as the debate with Trump, say, I never knew anything about it?
It's an implausible answer based on what I know. Let's just take one example of something that he keeps saying. I didn't know anything about Burisma. It wasn't on my radar. When I fired the prosecutor, I didn't know he was investigating my son's company. Well, we now know from the records that I've gotten from the State Department under FOIA and from public records that are out there from other sources, Joe Biden knew in December 2015 that there was an active investigation into Burisma and Hunter Biden. He knew it because the New York Times came to them and told them that, and the New York Times got a statement back from the Biden vice president's office saying that they understood this was, but this was Hunter's problem, not the vice president. So the vice president had firsthand knowledge that his son's company was under investigation by the very prosecutor that he would later go and try to fire just a few months later. And he fires that prosecutor. He forces the firing of that prosecutor at a time where you now see Burisma all over the State Department, pressuring the State Department. You got to stop this. You got to stop this. In one of the memos I obtained recently, the lawyers for Burisma are in the United States, a company called Blue Star Strategies, big Democratic firm. They go to the State Department and they're not even subtle about why they think the corruption allegations have to be stopped in their track. They say to the State Department, Hunter Biden's on the board. You got to deal with this. You can't let him get embarrassed. And at that point, when the State Department isn't willing to intervene and stop the investigation or stop calling Burisma corrupt, Joe Biden steps into action himself and fires this prosecutor. He says he had different motives. At the end of the day, for a conflict of interest, it doesn't matter if your motives are good or bad. Once you know that prosecutor is involved, you should step aside from any decision. He didn't. He stepped into the void. He stepped into an ethical conflict of interest. And I think at the end of the day, he shamed his country and his family in doing so.
Burisma is sort of a understandable single company path of corruption.
Right.
But China, it seems to me, there are so many different trails.
That's right.
And so many different components. And if you believe the numbers, they're clearly in the billion-dollar plus range. I mean, how is that possible?
Well, China has a lot of money, and China needed something from the Obama-Biden administration. This gets lost. This is a story I wrote a few months ago, and I think the president then reacted to it and is starting to take some action. But if you look at the time frame where Hunter Biden starts to get in business with the Chinese companies and Chinese companies tied both to the PLA, the People's Liberation Army, the military of communist China, and some are companies tied to Communist Party members in China. So he's working with the people that don't love America in China. The Chinese were looking for something very important. They were growing, but they don't have great capital markets like the amazing Dow Jones and capital markets we have in the United States. they needed access to our markets to capitalize the growth in China. And they couldn't get in because there was this little hiccup called Sarbanes-Oxley, which says if you're going to come onto the American markets, you have to abide by our accounting rules. You can't defraud investors. There has to be transparency. It's a law that was passed, and it's been all American companies that compete on our markets for capital have to comply with these very stringent accounting things. Well, what remarkably is going on is as Hunter Biden is inserting himself into the country, the Chinese get the ultimate gift from the Obama Biden administration, and that is a waiver. In 2013, there's a special body associated with the Securities and Exchange Commission, and they give a waiver and say, okay, China, guess what? We're going to let you come into the capital markets here, but you don't have to comply with Sarbanes-Oxley. You can do some things, but we know you like to be private in China. We're going to give you a pass on that. And they set out some requirements, I would say lip service requirements to the accounting principles, but they basically excluded China. And then China comes into these markets with a vengeance in 2013, 14, 15, 16, sucks billions of dollars of capital out into their own country without having to comply with these rules. And then I took a look and started to go through, well, what were they supposed to comply with? And it turns out they didn't even comply with the very light requirements of this very special deal that China got. So that's when Hunter Biden is cashing in. And the more that that ruling took effect, the more China started to penetrate our markets, the more the deal started to flow in to Hunter Biden and his companies and Devin Archer's companies. The timing between those two decisions, Hunter Biden's decision to go get Chinese business and Joe Biden's administration's decision to give the Chinese an extraordinary waiver, they gave the Chinese an incredible advantage. Those two are tied together, at least in the timeline that we've built, and that should trouble us all.
When they talk about, like, the Chinese were going to give him $1.5 billion to invest, he would then get an override, which, as I understand it, would be about $30 million a year for managing all this. That's sort of a standard fee. But A, he doesn't know anything about investing anything. And B, do we see a lifestyle comparable to the sheer cash flow? The amount of money from Russia, Ukraine, and China is so great. I mean, these guys could have, you know, paved all of Delaware in gold.
If you take the amount of money flowing in, if it really is $200 million coming in for Yelena Batorina, if it's really $1.5 billion, and by Hunter Biden's own lawyer's comments, he owned 10% of that $1.5 billion fund. So you can start to do the math. That's a big number. He flipped several companies. At some point, I hope we get a chance to talk about Hennigis, a Michigan auto parts company, because great story about how the Biden family flipped that to Chinese control. There's all of these transactions going on, and there's large amounts of money. We had an opportunity about 12 months ago to get some visibility into Hunter Biden's wealth when a woman claimed that he had fathered her son, and she went to court in a paternity suit trying to get access to his records, and then he refused to comply, and then they settled out of court. So we lost that extraordinary opportunity to see what Hunter Biden might have in his bankroll, where it might have gone. And I think one of the great questions that you always ask, and it's a simple question, but the vice president has never asked it, is at any time did Hunter Biden make money that he then gave to you in some retirement account, some other account? That question has not been asked or answered in an appropriate way. It's a fair question to ask. And listen, if it didn't happen, Joe Biden could say, nope, never got any of that money. I don't have any secret offshore accounts. I don't have anything like this. We don't know what Hunter Biden did with his money. Did he lose it in other investments? Did he bank it away in some Cayman Islands account? Did he blow it away on a lavish lifestyle? Because we know he had a drug addiction. And from the records the Senate had, apparently some engagement with prostitution rings. You can lose a lot of money quickly that way. We don't have complete visibility into it. But when you take the sheer numbers, this business game of following behind the vice president's jet and going into China, Kazakhstan, Russia, and Ukraine and making money, big dollars were exchanged. Just in Burisma, we can see $4 million coming in between 2014 and 2016. That's records that the FBI sees, that we can see the bank accounts. I see many other multi-million dollar transactions in those accounts coming in from other countries. Hunter Biden and his business partner, particularly Devin Archer, were moving in tens of millions of dollars a year. How much of it they still have or where it is still a mystery to us.
So let me go back, because you mentioned the auto company in Michigan. Walk us through that, because I know President Trump's talked about it in one of his trips to Michigan.
So we had this story about 3-4 weeks ago on Just the News, and Seamus Bruner, who works for Peter Schweitzer, and I worked on this for a while. It's a really remarkable story. So there's an all-American auto parts manufacturer in Michigan called Hennigis. It's been around for 40, 50 years. It feeds the GMs and the Fords of the world, and it's iconic. It's a big employer in Michigan. And as it grew, it diversified, and some of its business moved into the military side of business. And so they started to create very specialized windshields that can be put in American fighter jets, and they withstand vibration so they don't break it at hypersonic speeds, and they don't rattle, they don't cause fog. There's some unique, what we call dual-use technology, which is protected by U.S. law. And so Hunter Biden's hedge fund comes in there, they buy a percentage of it, then they flip it to a Chinese company. Now, who is that Chinese company? It's called AVIC. AVIC is basically the Boeing or McDonnell Douglas of China. It makes all of the military aircraft for China's military. And Hunter Biden gets this company, he flips it into this other company, AVIC, and there's a process, we've heard this name before, called CFIUS, the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States. It's 10 cabinet members get together and they review any sensitive technology or any sensitive asset in America that a foreign country may be seeking to buy. CFIUS has got to take a look at the Hennigis transaction in China. Why? Because it has this very sensitive military aircraft capability. And they rubber stamp it again, and China ends up with this iconic American company with good, very important fighter jet window shield technology. And what do we find out? What turns out, at the time CFIUS made that decision, AVIC, the Chinese company, had been sanctioned 5 times already by the United States for bad behavior, including proliferating weapons to America's enemies. And one of its subsidiaries, literally just a few months before Hunter Biden pulls off this transaction, it had just been flagged as wrongly helping the Chinese military in violation of U.S. law. So it's flagged. And then since that time, AVIC has been repeatedly identified by the Pentagon as a threat to American national security. Somehow, the CFIUS overlooked all of that history and allowed Hunter Biden to make a big money selling an iconic American auto parts and aircraft parts maker to the Chinese Communist Party.
At a time when we're being warned by the Director of National Intelligence that the Chinese are stealing about $500 billion a year of intellectual property, why do you think the Obama administration, not just Biden, but the administration, was so endlessly lax about protecting America?
Yeah, that's a great question. In my book, I spend a lot of time talking about what's the most concerning thing. I think if you look at the last half century of American foreign policy, there's been two approaches. The Reagan approach, which is peace through strength, which is we don't give in to our enemies. We defeat them, and hopefully peacefully, by remaining strong and not giving into their will. And then I think Donald Trump is an inheritor and maybe a reviver of the peace through strength approach to foreign policy. In the case of the Obama administration, they pursued a strategy of appeasement, which is we don't want you, Iran, to keep making those weapons. So we'll give you billions of dollars and try to pay you not to make those weapons. Russia, we want you to become our friend, even though all of our intelligence tells us you're never going to be our friend. So we're going to give you billions of dollars of uranium contracts that make American utilities reliant on Russian uranium for decades to come. We're going to give you 20% of the ore under our ground. We're going to help you create a rival to our Silicon Valley called Skokovo. And you're going to like us because we do that. Well, we learned that didn't work out well, because as soon as Vladimir Putin got everything he wanted, he invaded Ukraine and turned the entire narrative around on us. And yet the Obama administration once again engaged in appeasement with China. There have been warning flags for years by the admirals in the Pacific Fleet saying China is not our friend. They're growing in military strength. They have ill intentions in the South China Seas. And yet what does the Joe Biden Obama administration do? They're constantly giving away favors to China. And more importantly, preaching a very deceptive line, which is China is not dangerous. A prosperous China is good for America. They're not really a harm. They're not really stealing our IP. Let's be good to them. The more we give them access to our markets, the more democratic they're going to be. I don't think you could tell the Uyghurs in China that China's become any more democrat with the concentration camps that they're put into, the human rights people that are being tortured, Hong Kong losing all of its freedoms. Joe Biden was the architect of all the foreign policy. Barack Obama didn't care about foreign policy. Joe Biden was the foreign policy guy, and he got it wrong on Russia. He got it wrong on China, and he got it wrong on Ukraine, and he got it wrong on Iran, and he got it wrong even on Osama bin Laden. And now he wants to run that foreign policy back in America again.
You may remember that former Secretary of Defense Bob Gates said that in 50 years, Biden had been on the wrong side of every major decision in national security.
He wrote that in his memoir, and I think that history will show that to be true.
A little bit sobering when you look at it. So now this most recent thing is like a novel. You can't make this stuff up. Guy in Delaware has a computer that was brought in to be fixed, and the guy who brought it in apparently forgot it. And so the guy finally gets around to looking at it and realizes it has all this stuff about Hunter Biden's corrupt behavior. Yeah. And it turns out the guy who owns the little computer store is a Trump supporter and tried apparently for 5 or 6 months to get somebody to look at it and finally got it to Rudy Giuliani, who understood instantly why it mattered, and began to break in the New York Post, at which point, just to make everything wilder, Twitter decides to block the New York Post. And apparently, as of the time you and I are talking, they have blocked the official Trump campaign site. You've got the Hunter Biden corruption. You've got Silicon Valley going crazy and thinking that they can dictate to the whole rest of the country. And all of this is kind of swirling. What do you make of all this?
I was thinking about this late last night after just a crazy day of developments. And what irony is there that a story about a corrupt oligarch in Ukraine enriching the vice president's son gets thwarted by a new generation of oligarchs in America who believe they can control thought, mind, speech, and conversation and political dialogue through their social media and search platforms? It's almost as though we've become the oligarchs and the Ukrainians and Russians are laughing at us because we've allowed the same system of multi-billionaires, all with a singular philosophy, this left-leaning philosophy, to control using our public resources, right? All that stuff moves across the internet. That's our sky, our land, that these wires and cables and beams run through to pick winners and losers and try to turn America into a single state aligned with the media, the social media companies, and the Democratic Party. It's almost a travesty, but one of the great things I know is those very wealthy people often underestimate the extraordinary cognizance of the American people. And I think the American people are a lot wiser. They see what's going on. They're frustrated by this one-sided debate and all of the crying wolf and all the silly things that the Democrats have done the last 4 years. And I suspect we may not measure this in polling before Election Day, but some of this stuff is probably boomeranging as we speak. People saying, this is just so rigged. You know what? I'm fed up with this. And so I think it could have a profound effect on the final days of the election.
I mean, the last 24 hours feel like we live in communist China.
Yeah.
Twitter stops the New York Post, which was founded by Alexander Hamilton. Then they stop the president's press secretary.
Right.
They stop apparently the Republican House Judiciary Committee. They've now stopped the presidential campaign. I mean, this is a level of interference that you literally, the kind of censorship you'd associate with a totalitarian state, except it's being done by a handful of people in Silicon Valley. And it turns out the key players on the political side, every one of them is a liberal Democrat. I mean, literally work for Democrats, not just in terms of their value system. Don't you think at some point that probably leads to a real explosive desire for reform?
It's been obvious for 4 years we needed this reform, and I think the president has tried to deliver as much as he can against all the obstacles that have been thrown against him. But right now, today, the Federal Trade Commission could intervene and say what we're witnessing right now is a restraint of interstate commerce. Facebook makes lots of money between the states exchanging these ideas. And when they restrain my publications or the New York Post publications' ability to share current information, they're engaging potentially in a violation of the Interstate Commerce Clause. I think there are other things that the Trump administration could do, the Justice Department could do. Sadly, this administration hasn't always used the greatest tools it has to fight some of this, but there are some good lawyers, some good trade experts that tomorrow could put an end to this by going to the court saying, this amounted to an infringement of interstate commerce. We're not going to let it happen. Whining on Twitter and complaining is one way to go about it, but it doesn't affect change. Right now, the president has the most powerful tool, the executive branch. He should use it to fight for the American people.
And I noticed that yesterday, Justice Clarence Thomas said, it's quite clear that Section 230 was written before you had these kind of giants, and that he personally would love to see a case come before the Supreme Court to review whether or not, in fact, they were truly protected by Section 230, which, of course, would be an enormous financial threat to all three of the major players. And I thought it was interesting that he was sending that signal. I think this is going to build. It's only been less than 24 hours that we've realized how really ruthless and dishonest they're becoming. In terms of staying with the scandal, is there more stuff out there? Are we at the tip of the iceberg? What's your sense?
So one of the things that I've been working on, and I think could be the most important final stage of understanding the breadth of the Biden scandal, is that I don't think those SARS reports that were sent to the Treasury Department were done willingly. Somebody in the financial community probably stood up and said, hey, there's something fishy going on here and you banking institutions are hiding it. I suspect there may be some whistleblowers or some other actions that we don't yet see that caused all of those suspicious activity reports to be flagged all at once. And that's where I'm focusing a lot of my reporting. I think that there is a strong possibility that something prompted the Treasury Department to start looking at all this money that Hunter Biden was going. And then the question is, if you see a large money laundering scandal, which normally that's what SARs are used for, what happened? Why did we only take a very narrow case and look at Hunter Biden's business partner on one transaction involving one Indian tribe and try to convict him? Did anyone look at the broader question of, was the president's son compromised? Was U.S. policy compromised? Was there a much larger inappropriate flow of money coming into Hunter Biden that put our national security, our financial institutions into risk? I think that's the big storyline that yet's been cracked. It's the question that the Senate report raised a few weeks ago. I've been working on that, and I'm beginning to get some sense that there may be one or two big revelations there that we don't yet know about, a whistleblower or some other mechanism that triggered all this attention to Hunter Biden's foreign cash flow.
And you've taken the huge undertaking of launching an entire new news service. Could you explain what you've done and how they can interact with it? It's a remarkable project on your part.
Thank you. We created a thing called Just the News, and we try to live up to it. No opinion. We're not trying to change anyone's mind. We're trying to give you straight factual stories every day. And one of the things that I think ails my industry today is an arrogance that because we report it, you must believe it. And how dare you challenge us? You see how defensive reporters get. I wanted to change that culture and say, listen, the reader should make up their mind. So what we do with every story we write 50 to 70 stories a day now, is we have a tool called Dig In. We write our story on one side, you click another button, you can see all the documents, all the notes, all the interviews, all the video, all the audio that we use to build this story, so that you don't have to take my word for it. I want you to look at the materials yourself. And so our greatest bond to our readers is we're going to be transparent with you. We're going to write stories. We're going to stay neutral. No opinion pieces on our site. And when we do a new story, we're going to open up our notebook to you so you can take a look. And that's really what's created the bond between us and our readers. We have 10 to 15 million monthly readers right now. We have 1 million podcast listeners, and we have about 5 million video viewers right now a month, and we're about 6 months old. So the reaction to what we've been trying to do has been great. I call it a Back to the Future project. I want to do journalism the way it was done 20 years ago or 30 years ago when I came into the profession, but deliver it in all the newfangled ways that the internet and YouTube and podcasts give us. But our promise to our readers is we're never going to engage in opinion, and we're always going to be transparent with you. Don't take our word for it. Click on Hunter Biden's documents. Click on Vice President Joe Biden's emails, his speeches. We make that all available. We're not trying to indoctrinate you. We're just trying to inform you.
So people can go to justthenews.com.
That's it. Justthenews.com is our website. We have 7 podcasts now weekly. You can get those on Apple or all the other platforms. And then we just announced a television partnership with Real America's Voice. And what's interesting about Real America's Voice, it's sort of the Fox News for the cable cutters generation. Fox News is an amazing place. I've worked there. I love the people there. But there's a whole generation of people that don't tune into it. They consider that mom and pop's cable network. There's all these people, 30, 40, 50 somethings, that are watching TV, digital, direct. And Real America's Voice has become like the Fox News for the cable cutter generation. It's doing millions of minutes a day of people watching on devices like Roku and Pluto and their Xboxes and their game boxes. And so we've created 3 original shows a day there. We'll probably be doing more, but we're trying to do some news for people who don't have the benefit or don't choose to subscribe to cable anymore.
That's great. We'll have all that on our show page so people can find you. This has been really helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you to my guest, John Solomon. You can read more about Biden's relationship with the Chinese Communist Party and get a link to John's book, Fallout, Nuclear Bribes, Russian Spies, and the Washington Lies That Enriched the Clinton and Biden Dynasties on our show page at newtsworld.com. Newt's World is produced by Gingrich 360 and iHeartMedia. Our executive producer is Debbie Myers. Our producer is Garnsey Sloan. And our researcher is Rachel Peterson. The artwork for the show was created by Steve Pendley. Special thanks to the team at Gingrich 360. Please email me with your questions at gingrich360.com/questions. I'll answer a selection of questions in future episodes. If you've been enjoying Newt's World, I hope you'll go to Apple Podcasts and both rate us with 5 stars and give us a review so others can learn what it's all about. I'm Newt Gingrich. This is Newt's World.